Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, August 19th, 2002. Today's session is titled, Jesus Makes a Difference in and Out of the Wilderness. Demons, Winds, and the Sea. Who is this? Presented by Stan Olson. The tape number is OLS-2002-01. Let's listen in.
The mysterious tape operator, you may now begin the tape. I'm Stan Olson, and this is Bible study for August something or other, 17, 18, 19, 20, I think. 19, for August 19, and the theme is Jesus Makes a Difference. I'm glad to have you with us this morning. The reason for the topic here is an outgrowth of a couple things. One is my own faith journey, my own faith experience. Thanks be to God, grew up in the church, never wandered very far away from it, but have had my own comings and goings, and discover that when I'm ready to give up on the institutional church, I discover I'm not ready to declare Jesus irrelevant. When I get frustrated with certain aspects of theology, I discover that Jesus still has an impact on my life. Jesus still makes a difference. The Jesus that we come to know in the New Testament, still very important. We'll go on about, at length about that, I won't. But Jesus makes a difference is a key piece of my own faith journey. That's the center for me. Secondly, in my scholarly work a few years ago when I was teaching at Luther Seminary, I had in mind, I'd been teaching a course on the New Testament miracles, the miracle stories, and had in mind writing a book about miracles in the New Testament and in Christian life, and this was the title, to be the title. This is all that really survives. I don't expect to ever get the book written. I'm sure it would have been a great book. Probably would have sold well in grocery stores. But it's not going to happen. But the title still is my entree to thinking about the miracle stories. I'm intrigued by stories in general, why people tell them, what impact they have on their lives, how the story is shaped and how the story shapes lives. So in these five sessions that I have with whomever shows up on a particular day, I'm going to use some texts, some t-shirts, some poetry, and some talk, and hope that we can do some exploring. I'm going to use that Jesus Makes a Difference theme as a lens for looking at the scriptures and our lives. I'm going to start each day with one or two miracle stories from the Gospel of Mark, and then move from there. But what I'm going to be doing each day is taking kind of one theme under this, one way in which the New Testament seems to suggest that Jesus makes a difference, and then try to follow that through and interpret it and help you connect with it. I discovered at 7:30, we do a short version of these Bible studies. And having done that in half an hour, I've decided to talk real fast, and I hope you'll be able to listen. Very good. I'll talk fast, you listen fast. But we'll do what we can. First story is a familiar one, and it's from Mark 1. But I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and listen as I read it to you. Jesus and the disciples went to Capernaum. And when the Sabbath came, he entered the synagogue and taught. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes. Just then there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. They were all amazed, and they kept on asking one another, "What is this? A new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." At once his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee. Several things I want to comment here, and then I'm going to read it to you again. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority. A little Greek lesson. The word for authority here could also be translated power. The Greek word means both things. It's a word with a double meaning. Our word authority comes fairly close, because authority has implications of power, but it doesn't have the same double meaning. So when you translate, you have to choose. You go with either power or authority. But you should know that both elements are there. The encounter with the demon, the conversation with the demon, "What have you to do with us? Have you come to destroy us?" And then the assertion, "I know who you are. I know who you are, the Holy One of God." The original hearers of this story would assume that the demon has, it's worth listening to. I mean, demons were not a fiction in their minds. The demons were in a realm that had an aspect of existence related to what they understood God's existence to be, so it would be worth listening to. What's the demon going to say here? And yet there's a question. Have you come to destroy us? Well, the reader, of course, knows the answer to this question. Yup. Norwegian translation. You know the answer. Gospels are written, as you're well aware, after the crucifixion and resurrection. Often said that they're written backwards from the crucifixion and resurrection story. So we all, as the readers, and the original readers, know the outcome, but the characters in the story don't. So we're allowed to have a certain level of superiority as we listen, not superior this way, but just superior knowledge. But the story, one of the ways the story works is to reinforce our knowledge, to do things that make us remember, we know that. And then they're astounded at his teaching at the beginning, verse 22, for he taught them as one having authority. They're astounded. And then after the miracle, they were all amazed, and they kept on asking one another, "What is this? A new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits and they obey him." They're astounded again. Different word, but same general concept. They're astounded. And they ask, "What is this?" Greek doesn't have question marks. It has questions, but it doesn't have question marks. So we don't know for sure where this question ends. So it may be, "What is this?" Question mark. "A new teaching with authority!" Exclamation mark. Or it may be, "What is this? A new teaching with authority?" Question mark. There's no way of knowing for sure, but it doesn't really matter, because we have an element of incredulity and assertion, whichever way you punctuate it. It's a new teaching with authority. Same word, authority. He said that at the beginning of the story. He's teaching with authority. And then after the healing, they say, "A new teaching with authority." There is no separation here between Jesus' teaching and his healing. It's not, we're not to understand this as, wow, not only is he a great teacher, but he's also a great healer. The story links those two things together, and the same reaction is appropriate, amazement, and the same realization is to be taken from the whole thing, the authority of Christ. So who is this question? Listen to one more thing. They say, what is this? And an aside, those of you that went through confirmation in the Lutheran Church know that in Luther's catechism, he has a question that he keeps using again and again. You give the third commandment, and then the question is, what does this mean? Any of you German experts, do you know what it says in German in Luther's original catechism?
What is this?
What is this? Yeah, was ist das? What is this? It's the same question here. In the catechism, when Luther asked the question, it's, what's this now? What does this mean for us? So the English translation is fine, but it's, how does this fit? And that's exactly what they're doing here. What is this? What's the point of this? The story is a open your eyes story. Pay attention. What's here? Listen to it again. Jesus and the disciples went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, he entered the synagogue and taught. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Just then there was in the synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, what have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Jesus rebuked him, saying, be silent and come out of him. And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. They were all amazed and kept on asking one another, what is this? A new teaching? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him. At once his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee. Miracle stories, stories about Jesus making a difference. The stories have a very similar theme, a very simple form. Problem, the miracle, the happening in the narrow sense, and then the proof of it, or the evidence of it. In the one we just read, the man is there with the unclean spirit. We've got a little dialogue that since is extended. Jesus says, come out. And the evidence, the proof, is the chorus, the response. They're all amazed, and they say, what is this? The next story here, one you may remember, Jesus left the synagogue, entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told him about her at once. He came and took her by the hand and lifted her up. Then the fever left her, and she began to serve them. I sometimes call this the sexist miracle. Jesus needed a little, wanted lunch, and but that would be to misunderstand what's going on here. The fact that she served, was raised to serve them, is evidence that she is restored to health. I'm going to say a little bit more about that later. But that it's not there with some perverse notion of reinforcing first century gender roles or anything like that. It's simply a way of saying she's right back on track. She is as she was intended to be. As we look at stories, oftentimes you can tell from what you want to look at what's been expanded out of that simple form, what's been added, what's been incorporated, and it helps us understand what's going on. This miracle form, of course, is very familiar to us. You see it in 30-second and 60-second bites on TV all the time. Let me take one from our youth. Guy can't get a date. He has bad breath. Every girl turns away from him. Pepsodent comes along. The miracle. And we see him walking off into the sunset with a beautiful girl. Problem, miracle, proof. We have it all the time. Another story. I'm going to read this one to you just to remind you, or just to say, comment. Several times in the Gospel of Mark, we have a miracle story. The next one coming up here is a leper healed. Jesus has compassion on him, reaches out, touches him, and heals him, and then says, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. He does anyway, but he just tells them, don't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. We see that a number of places in the Gospel of Mark. The people who studied this call this the secret, or the Christ secret, the Messianic secret. You're not supposed to tell. We don't know what's going on here. We don't know why Jesus says that. We don't know why Mark records it that way. A few of the times, as we're going to see another day, he also has a lot of go and tell what's been done. So you get both things. The best conjecture is that this secret business has to do with being sure you know the whole story. It ends with the cross. And in the story, if you don't know that part of it, you haven't got enough yet to tell what's fully happening. You need the whole thing. I think that fits right in with the notion of the teaching and the healing in that first story going together. It's a larger picture. Jesus isn't just the great healer. It's a much bigger picture. It makes a much bigger difference. The next one I want to look at is in Mark 4, 35 to 41. And again, I'll invite you just to listen and with your eyes closed. I'll just start a couple of verses ahead of time. This is a chapter of parables. Jesus, with many such parables, Jesus spoke the word to them as they were able to hear it. He did not speak to them except in parables, but he explained everything in private to his disciples. Now the miracle. On that day, when evening had come, he said to the disciples, "Let us go across to the other side of the sea." And leaving the crowd behind him, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" They were filled with awe. And again, the question format. The first one was the, "What is this?" Here it's, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" In both stories, the question does the same thing for us. It points to Jesus. It makes us think, what is this? Who is this? What's the impact? What's the meaning? These stories are meant to focus us on Jesus. In these stories, and the others like them, we clearly are being told about someone who has a noteworthy relationship with the world. An extraordinary connection, extraordinary capacities. Demons, storms, dread illnesses are somehow... Jesus has a noteworthy, extraordinary, unusual connection. Too early to leap to saying, "Well, that proves Jesus is God." Doesn't seem to be the point of the story. But clearly something is going on, because Jesus is in a role that the reader would tend to connect with godly power. The evangelist here is connecting Jesus with God as creator, God as ruler of the natural world, ruler of human life. What's the point of telling these stories? It's not, absolutely not intended to make you say, "Now how does that connect with what I learned in eighth grade science?" That's not why these stories are told. Not meant to raise questions for you about your understanding of the world. meant to raise, to open your eyes, to create insights into who Jesus is, what the impact of Jesus is. But with some pretty strong implications, as you can see. Scholars guess that Mark was written, the Gospel was written down in 55 or 60, in other words, 25, 30 years after Jesus' death. Scholars similarly guess that the Gospel of Mark was written a few decades later, maybe as late as 100. Look what happens when we get to the first to John. First paragraph. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word is Christ. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What came into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. In the beginning was the Word. What's the echo? What's he mimicking?
Genesis.
Obviously. Genesis 1, the creation story. And then he gets real explicit. He was in the beginning, all things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. So we by the time we've gotten to this later gospel, a Christian community, we've got some real explicit language about Jesus and creation and being one with the Creator. We could also, but won't, take a look at Colossians chapter 1, where this same kind of stuff shows up in poetic form, a late letter from the Pauline writings, where we've got something that explicit language about Jesus as Creator. Why is this stuff here? Why such strong statements about who Jesus is? Is it assertion? Is it announcement? Pronouncement? You should know that Jesus is the one who has godly power to have an impact on the natural world, on your life. Words of promise? Or is it argument? This needs to be believed. At least by the time we get to John, it's probably partly argument. Saying our experience of Christ is such that we can say no less. We have to use this kind of extraordinary language, familiar language to us, of course, but very extraordinary in its time. The fellow Jews of the Johannine community would not have found this language acceptable at all. There are connections and nuances, but they were defending their understanding of Christ by saying that this is the kind of difference that Jesus made, and therefore it's necessary to say this kind of thing about him. In the biblical world, Old and New Testament, I want to say a word about we have a tendency to assume that the world runs along just fine without God, and once in a while God intervenes. Now, if we reflect on that, we know we've got some problems with that notion. But that, I think that is our default assumption as 21st century Christians. For the people of God in Old and New Testaments, there's much more a matter of a continuum. God is always present. Sometimes God is dramatically present, but God is always present. God always involved. So the notion of wonder, What evokes wonder and awe? It's appropriate to be in awe, to express wonder about the world, and wonder then points to something. Wonder is related to worship, to that sense of awe, that the rightness of the awe that invites people to say, what's going on here? What's God doing? That draws us out, and that's clearly part of what the miracle stories are about. The The word creator, when we start associating God, Jesus with creation, Jesus, using creation language as John does, we should ask, what does creator mean? What does the word creator mean? I think, again, we have a tendency to assume, that in, at least in the Bible, that we're thinking about creation out of nothing. There was nothing, and God created. But in fact, the scriptures tend to use this concept more in the sense that we would use it in reference to this sculpture, that this is a creative work, that the sculptor gave form and meaning to something. The ancient Near Eastern concept of creation, Norm could tell us a lot more about this than I can, has elements of subduing chaos, of giving shape and order. You can see it in Genesis 1. In the beginning, when God created the world was without form and void. In other words, there's always something there. It doesn't say, and there was nothing, and God said, let there be light. So the world was without form and void, and God said, let there be light. So there's this notion of shaping and ordering and moving forward. And I would suggest to you that when we start applying this language to Jesus, we should be thinking in terms of purpose, of moving forward, moving creation towards its goal, its fullness. A moment ago, I told the story about Jesus healing Simon's mother-in-law. I guess I did read it to you. Jesus healing Simon's mother-in-law. And I said, and he restored her to her place in normal life. Would have been better if I had said, and he enabled her to continue in the purpose on her course, to move into the future. There's a fulfillment element in this, and I think that's one of the keys for us as we think about, well, what do miracle stories mean for us today? How does Jesus make a difference for us? It is in that sense of allowing us and our world to move in the direction that is fulfilling of it. In other words, God isn't just mending. God isn't just going back and fixing things in these miracle stories. It's not patching up. It's moving forward. I think we might think about that in connection with stewardship of the land, of the natural world, even of architecture, and lots of different things. I said I was going to use t-shirts, so I have a t-shirt for every day. When you're a bishop, you go to a lot of youth gatherings and a lot of church dedications. I don't know at what point I have to start declaring these things on my income tax. I think I can make this work. So today's people is from one of our newest congregations, People of Hope. The miracle stories are for people of hope, people who are looking forward. Hope is that lift. That for me is connected with the wonder, the awe that lifts us up. What's there? What may be there? Wonder is an interesting word because it is both awe, and it can be quickly has connotations of question. What will be there? I wonder. I wonder what that means. I wonder what's possible. I wonder what's coming. I also promised you a hope. Curve of hope. Tenacious cedars ring our northern lakes. At the very edge, they make do with a slip of land, facing constant wind, undermined by waves, pushed by relentless ice. Their fate is certain, and they lean closer and closer to the water. But always they reach up, they grow, pulled by adversity, responding with inborn purpose. Each trunk forms an upward curve of hope. So may my life curve up in the midst of challenges. As I grow toward death, the Spirit lifts me. My life tells a Christ story. Look, I curve toward God. Awe or wonder is our end of a high Christology, of a powerful understanding of who Jesus is. the awe piece is our end of that. In our own way, in our own lives, we say, Jesus has made a difference. And that requires me not only to think about my own life, but also to think about who Jesus is and where I fit in that. And again, the connection to worship. The Holden theme for this summer, 40 years in the wilderness, one of the ways that I could think about this theme would be to say that it's 40 years of helping people have their eyes open. 40 years of nurturing wonder and awe, doing the same kind of thing that the miracle stories do. Pointing people to Jesus, to the Creator, to how God makes a difference. I have a whole list of questions that I thought we could talk about, but first of all, I'm going to just ask you if you have any questions or observations to this point, and then I'll give you some. So if you don't ask questions, you get some.
In the Middle East, Peter's mother-in-law, he had a wife probably too. There were lots of women probably in this house. I think it's interesting we only hear about one.
Mm-hmm. I suppose the simple answer is that's all he needed to tell his story. What we do know about household arrangements are that they would be multi-generational, larger households usually, or in the vicinity.
Mm-hmm. When you were, I'm speaking from the point of view of having been raised Lutheran, having gone through some points of disillusion, but currently being Unitarian, because it allows me some flexibility to figure out things. So I have, one of the things that I wonder about is that there are so many wonderful stories in the Bible that if I think about them as symbolic stories, they contain great meaning for me. But if I get stuck on thinking about them as literal stories, like you brought in the point about the, trying to relate them back to eighth grade science, I get stuck and the big red X's start to flash. Mm-hmm. So when you were talking about these stories in Mark, and then also in John being told in such a way as to really get this message across, do you think that that, for example, these particular stories in Mark, like the one about the Jesus calming the storm, were told in such a way as to tell the listener, look, this is the historical event that really happened that was amazing and what you didn't know about? Or that, are you saying then that they were trying to say, look, Jesus was this kind of person that this is the kind of amazing feeling that he could generate in you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very many books have been written on your question here. Very clearly, Mark the Evangelist is writing down stories that he about things that happened. That's his understanding. These things happened. It wouldn't be correct to say these things happened exactly as he recorded them. He doesn't think that, because whenever we tell a story, we're telling a story to make a point. So he does have a point. And your question is absolutely worth talking about. I intentionally somewhat sidestep it by asking you not to, sometimes it's called the second naivete. We know we've got these questions, but let's try to step back and look again at what's going on in the story. But then we do, of course, have to ask, as a 21st century scientific world person, is there something here that prevents me from getting meaning from that story, or for sharing the basic insight that Mark... Clearly, Mark didn't tell the story of the leper healed because he wanted to put it on the record that Joshua was healed of leprosy. You know, you kind of get it there for the Holden Village Museum to have a name and a date. That's not what he's doing at all. But he does understand that something happened there. So It's legitimate for us to ask that question. Well, what do you suppose really happened? Now, that's a legitimate question, but we're not using the text and the story as it's intended to use if we just stop there. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a quest. It's kind of getting things out of the way. It's almost in the same category as my defining a couple terms for you. How are we going to? No, it's not the same category. It's a different order question, but. But it is preliminary in that same sense. Let me ask a question. But I started with this hymn because this whole language is still part of our worship life. Eternal Father, strong to save, whose arm has bound the restless wave, who bade the mighty ocean deep its own appointed limits keep. Oh, hear us when we cry to thee for those in peril on the sea. So-called Navy hymn. Second stanza, O Savior, whose almighty word the winds and waves submissive heard, who walked upon the foaming deep, different story that we're not going to look at, and calm amid the storm did sleep. That is our story. O hear us when we cry to thee for those in peril on the sea. We still, part of our worship life to connect that. So let me ask you the question. How is Jesus moving us toward fulfillment today? How is Jesus moving the world toward fulfillment today? What is God doing now? What do you think? What's going on? How is Jesus making a difference?
Okay, I'll tell you what I think it is. I think the Pope, working on his feelings about the Holocaust and with the Jews, is something that the Holy Spirit is working on.
Okay. I missed the very first part.
The Pope has written.
That was the word I missed. Okay.
Pope.
The Pope. All right. I thought you said the folk, and I couldn't tell. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
The Pope. A change of attitude, a re-looking at a major event, and in that case, at the church's role, the Roman Catholic Church's role in responding or not responding.
The Jews are now not being blamed for the crucifixion of Christ. Mm-hmm. It's another leaning that the church is doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. An interest, the whole question of what we sometimes call anti-Semitism in the scriptures, is it there? Is it being read in? But it clearly was there in the church afterwards, and a point at which Jesus is making a difference as we continue to try to understand what's going on in the world, in a pluralistic world. What are your thoughts? What is Jesus doing today? How is Jesus moving the world and its people towards fulfillment?
Well, I think you'd have very differing perspectives. The extreme of, I mean, the difference between a liberation theology perspective of Scripture and the fundamentalist Christians who see the erupting tensions in the Middle East and the black and white depiction of it as a fulfillment of Jesus' coming.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So for, you know, the where's Jesus there would depend upon what one has, aligned with in one's understanding of Scripture, mm-hmm. which can be very, very different as you talk with people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
I think that draws back to the sermon last night, this idea of, you know, how can we see fulfillment in a world where we're all hearing
right,
different messages and maybe hearing wrong things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking Ben's sermon too.
Yeah.
But all would claim that Jesus is making a difference. The liberation theologian, the fundamentalist, and a whole variety of other perspectives on that.
How do you deal with the fact that we've got those different perspectives?
History.
Tell me more.
It's very difficult for many cultures to forget past.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Jews with the Holocaust, the Armenians with the Turkish slaughter. These are remembered and acted upon, and hate is generated. So until we can forgive and forget historical past and work on kindness and goodness in the future, we're stuck.
Mm-hmm. One thing that one might say is, well, then there's the possibility that the stories, such stories as these, will allow people to take a critical step back,
mm-hmm.
and look again. I'm not convinced that I would agree with you on the forgetting part. The forgiving part, yes, but I'm wondering if sometimes remembering and reframing and discovering anew.
With the Crusades and all that stuff.
Is not what we're doing. If we take the forward look, the hopeful, the wonder look, what might God do in a world where we've got such divergent interpretations of what's going on in the Middle East, for instance, or in a church where we've got such divergent interpretations? What might God yet do with that? Having read you some miracle stories, this is from the Bible, for goodness sake, that have all these questions in them. I don't feel any need to answer all the questions, but I think to help let us think better what's going on.
I think all the great faiths want the same thing. We all want peace and prosperity for everybody. All the great faiths want that.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're all working towards that, then it will come. I don't know when. I mean, it looks horrible now, but it looked
mm-hmm.
horrible. I read something that was written in 1880 about the world falling apart. That sounded just like now. I laughed because it was written so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every generation says it's falling apart from the next generation. So
mm-hmm.
I have faith that of all the major faiths are working for peace and brotherhood and sisterhood and fulfillment.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Another thing we didn't talk about at all in the stories is that how they take the reality of evil seriously. And if we look at the 2,000 years of history or 4,000 years of history, well, we can only do this question with 2,000 years of history. Obviously, it's Jesus making a difference because we only. But does this to say that Jesus makes a difference? To assert that as an article of belief. Does that require that we're making progress? I don't think probably.
Last week, Bob Ekblad did the Bible study. And he had this process where, working with the people he was working with, which were the people in prison and the damned, as he called them, he always asked the question, who in the modern world do I identify with the characters in the story? And if I did a Bob Ekblad with you this morning, the question would be, who are the demons and who's possessed by the demons? And one group answers, well, the terrorists are the demons. And the other group asks, the Bush administration is the one possessed by the demons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how does Jesus make a difference?
Mm-hmm. And?
The answer
you don't have to have all the answers.
On the question as to, you know, can Jesus make a difference, I think it comes down, I think that there's great potential, and I think how much difference he can make has a lot to do with how we perceive that, or how if we receive him as God, if we see him as God, or we receive him in our lives personally, then he can start making a difference in individual lives, and that's where it's going to have to start, with individuals. And then and I think that if we have a sense of awe at Jesus as being powerful, as being filling us with his spirit, and we make a commitment of our lives to him and really seek him to make a difference in our lives individually, that's how he's going to be able to make a difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is really that necessary element of assuming the possibility. Lots of languages, different languages have been used over the years, invite Jesus into your life, say yes to Jesus. I saw a t-shirt yesterday on one young man around here. Lots of different ways, but that obviously, so that you know, you put an exclamation point behind this for yourself and in your witness to others. That's all I had to. Yeah.
I go to a Catholic high school, but I swim for a public high school in my city, and I was eating breakfast with my swim team and polo team in the morning of September 11th. And it amazed me how many of the kids on the team were atheists. And they came up to me asking me all these just random questions.
They were atheists, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, a few of them have like converted. I mean, mm-hmm. And it amazed me, you know, maybe, you know, God actually was part of September 11th. You know, we don't know that. Maybe he had an idea with that in changing individuals' lives, you know, just because someone else was, you know, hurt, you know, doesn't mean that God, you know, didn't have an idea with that in making somebody else live, mm-hmm. You know?
On Thursday, when I'm wearing my transformed t-shirt, talk a little bit about Romans 8, where Paul asserts that that in all things God works for good, which is not usually interpreted to mean that everything that happens was by God's command, but that nothing happens from which God is absent, or that God can turn. And I would come back to you, September 11th, to thinking of the just to think of the question of what is God doing there. And I suspect that we are on much safer ground to reverently, seriously, collegially ask that question than to assert that this, okay, that I know this to be what was happening. One can say, for me, this happened, but to do the other. So, yeah, good. That was, for many people, that event was a good conversation starter.
Stan, I'm up here.
Hi.
I think one reason that we're having a hard time with this one is we do want to say in the 21st century that Jesus makes a difference and a public difference in the world. Yet, if the nature miracle stories in Mark's Gospel, the other Gospels, are what is evidence for that in some way for Mark, then the problem now is that we can do all that. What Jesus did, we've tamed nature. I mean, mm-hmm. We can change sea level. We can do, and we are, in terms of global warming, doing more to the creation than we should be. We can heal people. I mean, so mm-hmm. We've got now those powers that in God's speech to Job in the whirlwind at the end, I mean, when God asked, are you able to change the storehouses and the snow and stuff? Yes, now we can. So we've claim that power for ourselves, and then the problem is, what difference does Jesus make in a world where we've tamed nature in a lot of ways? So I think we really have to think about the question, but it's harder mm-hmm. because it's the nature stuff is no longer maybe evidence that of a uniqueness. We're doing so much of the nature ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to say that people interpret Jesus in so many different ways. I think, you know, the Bush administration, so many of them are born again. So many of them feel like they have the beat on Jesus and know that it's right to go after the terrorists. I mean, their thinking is so different than my thinking in so many ways. And they are all believers. So when you say, what difference does Jesus make? I think people just interpret him the way they need to and go on.
Sure.
I can see some of how Jesus makes a difference in my daughter, and when they saw that Jesus made a difference in her life, and they came to her, and so see, because they can see that she reacted differently. Because I went to pick her up to take her over to school after swimming, and I was amazed at some of the attitudes at first when it happened. Because as I was driving over to pick her up, it came on the radio that this had happened. And like, you know, she was really upset because as we're going, then after I picked her up, then we're going over to Garmin, she said, Mom, some of the kids said, it's over there, it doesn't bother me, it doesn't affect me, it's not a part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and then I think as time went on, they saw it made a difference to her, and they came and talked to her, and that's what Jesus wants to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He wants, people that don't know him to come and talk to someone. And so mm-hmm. I think that's how he made a difference, right, in that, you know, little part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Steve?
I've got just a little different angle on something here, I think. Sometimes I think the question people are asking is, why isn't God making more of a difference in the world?
Yeah.
These are the kinds of things that if I were in charge, I'd be changing, right?
Yep.
Probably because I'm not in charge.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of like that story then, they were in the boat in the storm. Why are you sleeping back there in the back of the boat? Why aren't you doing something? I think it's question similar. We are in this boat being tossed about in all this chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't he doing something about it?
Wake up.
And maybe one thing that is significantly that I missed, he's in the boat with us.
Yeah.
I think that makes a huge difference for me, sort of incarnational idea there.
Mm-hmm.
That we're not in this boat all by ourselves. He is in the boat with us, and in the end, that will make a difference.
So we're going to keep waking him up.
That brings me back to Barb's question, I think, about the natural world, where we can do so much more, and then yours is the other half of it. Why isn't God doing God's share in this matter, when there are so many issues? What about that? The Japanese novelist Shosaku Endo wrote a story, Silence. It's not about responding to natural evil. It's responding to the human evil. But God remains silent. God doesn't ever speak up, doesn't ever act, and then when he wrestles with that. Are we left with saying that that Jesus makes a difference only because Jesus has changed people? No, but that's, excuse me, I said that more pejorative than I intended to. Is what we want to say that Jesus makes a difference through people? In a world where we have, we'll take the global warming case. In this world of global warming, we also have a Holden Village that is trying to use resources in a way that doesn't have such an impact, a negative impact on the world. And doing so out of a Christian faith tradition, a Jesus impact tradition, is that what we want to assert? Or do we also want to assert something more dramatic? Do we need to assert something more dramatic than that?
You know, the Jesus makes a difference really ties back with your People of Hope t-shirt, and that really, probably without Jesus, for me, as I theologically would look at what's going on, that's so, you know, is against, you know, what I think, you know, policies and values should be, you know, of our government in the world. But it's really, you know, the faith basis that there is hope, that hopefully somehow in the midst of all of this, things will unfold for good. That hopefully underlying there is that hand. that there is that purpose. Hopefully, as Holden, you know, works to use less energy, that again, it's like the salt, you know, the yeast that not just here but in other places, small and growing and changing slowly until, you know, there are more and more. But I also know that what I hope for is quite different than what somebody else may hope for. Mm-hmm. You know, they may hope for get rid of everything that they think is, you know, that they may have a perspective of a black and white and just want, you know, what's black to them to be, go away, to destroy it, to use violence, because there is much violence in the Bible.
We have to look at this over the long haul, too. Thousands and thousands and thousands of years can effect changes. Mm-hmm. And whether the changes are good or bad is yet to be known.
But is just to build on that, or kind of to put the opposite question, is Jesus making dramatic differences today? Dramatic, interventional kinds of differences?
Probably more than we realize. Our eyes aren't always open to, you know, what Jesus is actually doing and what mm-hmm. we might think man has done. I mean, I think God has given man the wisdom and developed this medical knowledge and so on along the way. And I think sometimes our eyes are closed mm-hmm. to it being Jesus or God doing it. Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that Jesus makes the biggest difference just to individuals, just in you may say, many small ways to the individual, more than to the masses? We only hear about the 5,000 that were fed, but mostly we hear about the few that were healed. I think that Jesus makes a difference when we come up here to the individual. Mm-hmm. And on many other occasions, I just experienced it at a memorial service just last week, where one little person died, and the people that supported that family, I was just awed at that. The church was so full that they had to take a television into the another room. Hmm. So that everybody could be there, and the whole thing was the spirit of Jesus.
And we don't, our eyes open, we ought not underestimate that impact of the individual. Or the, and here at Holden, we talk also a lot about community, as we ought. It isn't just isolated individuals, it's brother and sister together. It's community, and the dramatic stories that can be told about one individual who has made a difference because of their faith, because of Jesus making a difference to them. You mentioned memorial services. I mean, that's one time you hear some of these stories. And unfortunately, sometimes we don't hear them until we get to the memorial service people. But then think about the ripple effect of a Holden Village or a West Preeb, who, in an odd, well, yes, I guess odd sort of way, we from a notion of you should give us this mining camp, but the
do we, there's an expression, the God of the gaps, do we just use God to fill in for what we can't accomplish for ourselves, or do we assume that God is involved in all of this? And the question of does Jesus make a difference? How does Jesus make a difference? Gives me a good segue to 10 o'clock here.
You know, I would add that I think when I think back in my life, and I really relate to what you shared about the memorial service, each one of us have probably two or three, maybe four very powerful people in our life that we go back to. They might have been a teacher, might have been a coach, parent, colleague. And there was some spirit, you know, it may have been the spirit of divinity, maybe a spirit, but really an unusual person that had an impact. And I think what we're called to in our faith life is, you know, it's the miracle that each one of us can have in the lives of others, just on a daily basis. And it's that reverberating impact. And I went to a service not too long ago where what was shared, the pastor asked individuals to stand up who had had a positive impact because of this person's life. And the stories that individuals share, either because this person was a coach or had been a teacher in their life, they got something and they took a piece of that person in their own life because they were inspired, and they in turn then became a coach or a teacher or a mentor. And one person can truly have an incredibly profound impact. And I think, you know, there, I think that's what really, my perception at least, is Jesus calls us to be our best self and to go out, do social justice, have an impact. There's not a case where we can save the world, but we can make a difference. This individual going down the beach, they're all the tide has gone out, and there are all these starfish who are stranded. And this person going along the beach and picks up a starfish, throws one out, goes another 5 feet, throws one out, and this person comes up. What are you doing? You can't possibly save all these starfish. You're not making any difference. And he picks up a starfish and he throws it out in the water. He said, I just made a difference for that one. And I think that's what Jesus calls us. Try to make some difference in the world in a way that we can, as a teacher, as a coach, as a parent, as a colleague at work, take on the challenges that we can take on, and we all get inspired by each other's example. I think that's what people are attracted to Holden. We go and we are inspired by people's example, and it echoes within us that we can do more, we can be our best self, we can take God's word and Jesus' word and go out and try to make some more difference in the world, however that might be happening.
And we come back to the question then of Jesus making a difference. Is it Jesus' example? Does Jesus transform us? In the next four sessions, we're going to look at some specifics about this. But if any of you come back, I at least will be continuing to think about the question of the natural world. Barb rightly singled out these nature miracle stories as being a little different. They don't. The calming the sea story doesn't work in quite the same way that the Christian coach story works. It's a different kind of thing. So how do we think about that? It's 10 o'clock. I'm supposed to quit on time. I, however, am staying. But the rest of you are, please feel free to leave. Thank you for being here.